Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Monday, March 23rd will come to order. Is Senator Scogan here?
He was here.
Senator Scogan, welcome to the committee. Senate File 1133. The committee members would like a piece of cake. Senator Ortman sent us a cake from Carver County. Very nice of her. Very interesting trip we had out there. If we have any left over after the committee members have had some, you people in the audience can have a piece too if you would like. Senator Scogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to get cake, how would I get on your committees?
Save a piece for next year.
All depends on how you vote on a couple other bills.
The chair is watching me closely. Senate File 1133. Members, is an appropriation bill of $250,000. 2 years ago, we took Northern Connections out of Purim from a pilot project to a ongoing project, and we funded it $250,000 a year, each year of the biennium. In the governor's original budget proposal this year, he recommended that we cut some of that funding, and it was at that time that those who work with Northern Connections in Purim came to me and asked if we would at least come forward with a proposal to continue their full funding. Northern Connections, really, members, is leading edge, one-stop approach to filling voids in the traditional workforce system. And through their pilot project 3 years ago, we certainly saw that it did good work. It leads to reemployment counseling and services, job retention counseling, career advancement counseling, helps people make that transition to new work, to a reemployment, and they do it on a very proactive and intensive approach. They're efficient, they're accessible, and I have a couple of people here who can explain it better than I, and Mr. Chair, I would refer you to my witnesses today.
Who would like to go first?
I would. I'm Deborah Carpenter. I'm Executive Director for Northern Connections. As Senator Scogan said, we work in 12 counties in west central Minnesota, and we work with people who have just recently gone off of Minnesota Family Investment Program or the Diversionary Work Program Cash Assistance. And we work with them on job retention if they're currently working, reemployment if they're not currently working, thinking longer term about what they want to do over a longer period of time, and then what skills they'll need to gain to move into a job that is a higher wage job, and then thinking about the assets that they can accumulate to move them up in terms of their economic standing, and make referrals to a lot of other organizations to help them out when they get into situations where they need that kind of assistance. For instance, some of our customers recently with the jobs that they're in, if their hours are cut, they may have trouble meeting their rent payments or utility payments, and referring them to other agencies that might be able to help them in terms of filling some of those gaps that they encounter. So we do that in a rural area of Minnesota, and we do it telephonically because we need to alleviate some of the barriers that people have. Transportation is a huge barrier in our part of the state. And many people don't have reliable cars. They may not have a license. So that's something that by doing it telephonically, they don't have to travel anywhere. We don't have to travel somewhere, which, again, takes time. They won't need to have child care if we're doing it telephonically with them. And our hours are 8:30 to 8 Monday through Friday and 9 to 5 on Saturdays because the customers we're working with don't work traditional 8 to 4:30 hours. One of our customers, Lisa Lindbergh, is with me today. I'll let Lisa talk a little bit about her experience in working with us and then answer questions.
I am Lisa Lindbergh. I've
Welcome
been
to the committee,
a part of Northern Connections for over 2 years now, and they have helped me obtain a career that I've wanted to be in.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you say your last name just one more time?
Lindbergh.
Lindbergh. Okay. Thank you. B-E-R-G or B-U-R-G?
E-R-G.
E-R-G.
Yeah. And it's L-E-I-S-A.
L-E. Oh, we got that wrong, too. Okay. Okay.
What they have encouraged me to get my GED and my job where I work now. I do crisis calls, something that I've wanted to do for a while, and they've walked me through my stress and just encouraged me through information. I'm getting tongue-tied. They helped me with a lot of information, calling me, just talking with me, and helped me through the things that I needed help through.
Mr. Chair and members, it's a voluntary program. They are contacted, but close to 90% of those contacted come back and use the service. And I believe Ms. Carpenter even has been referenced in other reports, one being the coalition or the report to end poverty in the state of Minnesota. So
I do have a one-page description of the program, and I have the references in the Commission to End Poverty report, the final legislative report, where they talk about Northern Connections and the recommendation that they have to use programs such as Northern Connections to connect people at times of need.
And Ms. Carpenter, is it Carpenter or Carpenter?
Carpenter.
We have it spelt wrong on the agenda, correct?
Earl.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just trying to read this. I figured it was Tur. Okay. You maybe told us already, and I wasn't listening. But have you been able to quantify the return on investment here at all?
That's very difficult for us to do. We've worked with the Department of Human Services and Department of Employment and Economic Development, but the data doesn't lend itself well to look at recidivism rates because of people applying late, and then it appears that they've gone off the program and the DWP or MPRP program, but in fact they've just made their applications or turned in their applications late. So there's a lot of issues with the data, and we haven't been able to quantify that.
Are there any questions for Senator Scogin or any of the witnesses? Senator Scogin, do you have any other witnesses?
This will be it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sparks.
I would just move that Senate File 1133 be laid on the table for possible inclusion.
Okay. Mr. Jensen, what just for the governor's information on the governor's budget on this?
Mr. Chairman and members, the base amount here was $250,000 each year. The governor cuts $100,000 each year for a base amount. And the governor's recommendation of $300,000
for the biennium. Okay. All right. All right. Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1113 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Thank you, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Senator Kulesh. Senator Kulesh.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 89 is a reemployment assistance training program, and the subsection 15 is available for suitable work. The idea being is that currently students need to discontinue their program. And that is not the same, and taking classes and discontinuing their classes is not the same as discontinuing their program. This is cleanup language on that. I have Mr. Lee Nelson here from D to explain it more.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. I just want to comment that we have worked with Senator Kulesh on this bill, and while I can't say that the administration supports this, I Let's just say we drafted it, so.
And what does it do?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what it will do is make it, first of all, it helps individuals who are apprentices who are going to school. They would be moved into reemployment assistance training, so essentially it waives all the requirements of being available for work and actively seeking work because they're in this training program. What is, they are currently caught in a catch-22 whereby under current law they have to be willing to discontinue their program in order to collect benefits. But if they're willing to discontinue their program, they can no longer be in the apprenticeship program. But the apprenticeship program is the only way they find work. So they are really caught in a catch-22. And why this has come up recently and never occurred in the past is there are a lot of apprentices currently unemployed. That had never occurred 2 or 3 years ago. And so we're seeing large numbers of apprentices unemployed, and now they're being denied unemployment, but it's simply because they're in the apprenticeship program. And this would substantially help them. In addition, this would assist individuals who are attending principally college and being able to collect unemployment benefits if they can rearrange their college schedule or rearrange their class schedule in order to accept work. The current statute was written a number of years ago and doesn't deal very well with things like internet classes, weekend classes. So this law provides we're only dealing with people who are required to, I call it, have your butt in a seat in a particular place at a particular time. But it provides a lot more flexibility so that individuals can obtain training while requesting unemployment benefits.
Okay. Are there any questions, Senator Vanderbilt?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So someone would collect unemployment while they're going to school. Is that what this bill lets them do?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vanderveer, yes, under certain conditions, they would still have to be willing to either discontinue school or rearrange their class schedule so that it wouldn't conflict with obtaining employment. They couldn't just say, I'm going to attend school. They have to be capable of rearranging their class schedule, or if they're incapable of that, they have to be willing to discontinue school. And then they could collect unemployment benefits.
So, Mr. Chair, what are you changing? So, maybe Senator Kalish.
Essentially, we're changing it from program to class. Apprenticeship program is an ongoing process, and the current law says they need to be willing to drop out of their program in order to do that. But they can drop out of an apprenticeship class still be ready to work. It's about the being ready to work when a job is available for them. So it's just tweaks the law so that it's a little more flexible with the current training system and the number of apprentices that are unemployed and folks that are going back to school. A lot of folks that have lost their jobs recently are going back to school. And it allows them to, if they've got a job or offered a job that's going to cut into a particular class or whatever, they can stay or rearrange that class so it meets their new work schedule, or they can drop it but still continue in their programs.
So
it's not; they still have to be available to work, Senator Vanderbilt. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none. Senator Kulesh, any final comments?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then Senator Kulesh moves that Senate file number 89 be recommended, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Kulesh. Who wants to go next?
That's you.
It's already stood up.
Was that an age before beauty thing? Was that what that was?
The mayor of St. Paul.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He's the mayor.
He's in the capital city right now, so that's okay. Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this Twin Cities Rise is not a new program. And one thing about this group is they only get paid if they show results, and they've shown great results over the years. And the population they serve is 65 to 70%, I'm told, ex-prisoners or people that have been in trouble with the law. So they deal with some of the, well, it's a tough crowd to rehab, and they're doing a very successful job of doing it. And it's one of the few I've heard of like this around the nation. So two-thirds of their money comes from donations. So, and I mentioned about 70% are prison people that have been in incarcerated. One of the sheets in your folder will show you that. I don't have the 2008 numbers, but 2007 they worked with about 1,700 folks. Interesting number that I see here is that the pre-income approach before these people got in this training program and got through this these courses was making $4,400 a year. And after the post-program, the graduation income rose all the way to $26,000. So you go from $4,500 to $26,000 for income. And the success rate, keep in mind, this is, I hate to say it this way, kind of a tougher crowd to work with. But when you get a participant, the success rate being 67%, I think you'll all agree with me that something's working here. So with that, I have three folks I'd like to talk briefly. Mr. Cy Houston and Roy Barker, and you're not April Lucas. Kathy Lawrence is here. So I'll let them talk. I know you're busy. And we'll
who wants to go first? Senator Metzen, that was a way better bill presentation than the last time we were together.
Members of the committee, we were in the committee.
You don't have to explain it.
Senator Tomasoni said that was the worst presentation I've ever heard.
This one was really
good.
You're
so honest. You must have been a hockey player. But okay. Did we get the bill passed?
That was beautiful.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to
do. Who wants to go first?
Mr. Chair, I will.
Say your name for the record, please.
My name is Cy Houston. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We're here representing a very unique program because not only did it start out as an anti-poverty program, but it's one that actually works. We actually take people who are in poverty situations, help them change their lives, and achieve a career track position where, as the senator said, we see astounding results in the 500% range of return on the program. Actually, we're running a current success rate of 73%. We served almost 1,900 people this year. Of those, 640 are in our core program. We also run programs for people who are currently incarcerated and who are about to be released. It's called an Inside Out program. We run an AWALI program that is helping those people who have been released, who are on the street and trying to figure out what to do with their lives. And we help move them into our core program where we've served those 640 people. Those 640 people currently in 2008 had an earned income of less than $400 a month, and we're able to place them in positions that averaged over $24,000 a year. That allows us to truly be a return on investment program. And we're only, as the senator said, we're only a pay-for-performance program. There's no risk to the state or to any other funding agency because we don't ask for any reimbursement or funding until we've actually demonstrated that we have placed a person in the job and they can stay there for 1 year. If you look at our retention rates, people go into that job and they stay there, almost all of them. At the end of the first year, it's an 82% return, or I'm sorry, 82% of the people are still in that job. If you look at the return on investment specifically, it's on page 4 of the, looks like a PowerPoint document inside your annual report. You'll see that in 2007, there was an investment of under $400,000 with a return of $1.7 million on that same money with a two-year payback. That's almost a 400% return. If you take over the long haul, what happens, we can show a 300% return. So we have about $3.5 million the state has provided to fund our program since 1997. And by the state's own figures, these are not Twin Cities Rise figures. These figures come from the state and from an economist. I think there's an article in your packet as well from an economist at McAllister. So these are not our numbers. These are numbers that somebody else works up. And they bring those numbers back to the state, and they say for $3.5 million since 97, we'll give you over $14 million back. This counts only the money saved by the state. It doesn't count anything, that any federal reimbursement or federal savings that would be on top of that. The program, what we're looking for this year is to have a multi-year program without the annual cap, because we believe we've proven ourselves. We also know that in the population groups, if you look at who's hurt the most in the current economic times, the people who are the poorest take some of the biggest hit. And if we could continue to provide services in a multi-year fashion, because we know we provide the return, we benefit, the individual benefits, and the state benefits. There's clearly it's a win-win-win situation for all. But we can talk about numbers, but let me introduce to you someone who's actually been there, somebody who came to Twin Cities Rise seeking to change his life. He came in as a participant, completed our program, final placement, and let me have him tell his story. Let me introduce Roy Barker. Roy is one of our esteemed graduates of our program.
Welcome, Mr. Barker, to the committee. Please start by saying your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Roy Barker, B-A-R-K-E-R. And I'm here to put a face on what Sai just talked about. Like many people from poverty, I come. Many of the people in Minnesota, actually, I come from Chicago. I grew up there in tougher neighborhoods. I grew up in the inner city slums. Really, grew up in the projects. And my first career was that of a criminal. Honestly, I was a career criminal, and there were lots of costs to society. I wasn't always caught for the crimes that I committed, and I often committed crimes in conjunction with other people. All of these were costs to the city, the state, not being a real father, not taking care of my children. A lot of those, all of those are costs that I think Sai hasn't talked about, but they are costs to society. Upon coming to Twin Cities Rise, there was a definite change in my thinking and in my behavior. The programs at Twin Cities Rise taught me to believe in myself, to believe in my own capabilities, and to start thinking differently. With being at Twin Cities Rise, I learned how to work. I learned how to get a job, to work for the things that I wanted, to not take shortcuts or the easy way out. What I did is upon completion of the program at Twin Cities Rise, I then went to college. And I went to college. I got my bachelor's degree and went out into the world, and I worked for a while. And then I was called back to work at Twin Cities Rise. Coming back to Twin Cities Rise, I now head up the program that Sai talked about, the Awali Inside Out program. So my second career is a career. Is the career of an empowered person. So now I'm a homeowner, I'm a taxpayer, and I'm proud to say that I'm an upstanding citizen. I'm a father, I'm a role model. And I motivate young men who are like myself, who are lost and without hope. And I motivate them and tell them, you know, help them to understand that they can achieve things. Through this program, my life has changed so significantly. I'm currently enrolled in a master's program at Bethel University. I'm the director, like I said, of the Twin Cities Rise Awali and Inside Out program. I started off as a student, and I've worked my way up. So my connection has been a long one with Twin Cities Rise. I've been associated with this program since 2003. But the benefits that I've reaped are not the only benefits. They're the benefits to society. No longer am I committing crimes. No longer does society have to worry about my sons growing up and continuing to commit crimes. No longer will society have to be worried about me encouraging others to commit crimes. There are huge numbers of savings to society that Twin Cities Rise has implemented, and we simply don't take advantage of that. We don't talk about it. It's kind of an expectation, but what we're talking about is a program that creates real life change. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Barker. Senator Metzen, do you have any other witnesses today?
I think we're fine. Hopefully we would convince you that this is one of the real good investments that we can make here.
Right. I think it's a good program. Mr. Jensen, maybe just going to remind members what the governor's recommendation was.
Mr. Chairman and members, the base budget here for the biennium was $910,000. The governor cuts $210,000, leaving $700,000 for the biennium, or $350,000 a year.
Well, we keep talking about the return on investment on this one, folks, and I think this is one of the highest ones you'll ever encounter. At least I've been on this committee for a while, and it's one of the best programs I've seen. But yeah, do we make a motion or something?
Yeah, then we would just move. Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 792 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
Thank you.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Metzen. Senator Cohen. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. This division has heard this bill previously over the last couple of years, Senate File 1115. This is the bill that I've authored in the past on behalf of the City of St. Paul, and obviously I'm going to have Mayor Coleman speak to it in more detail. And what it does is allows forgiveness of the loan for the XL Energy Center, the hockey arena, that St. Paul owes the state of Minnesota. It delays that for 4 years, so the money continues to come in and then forgives the loan subsequent to that. Let me just, before the mayor testifies as to the totality of what's proposed, just offer a couple of perspectives. And again, I think most of you, certainly not Senator Kielash, but most of you have heard this before. And maybe just procedurally, we have passed the bill out of this division twice before. It was included in the Senate supplemental finance bill last year. The House accepted it in conference committee, and we got as far as the governor's office at about 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock that Saturday night, when the governor made it clear that he thought this is not something that would be acceptable. I can't speak for the governor. I understand that there have been discussions with him this year in more detail and more substance than have taken place in the past, and we're optimistic that the governor is more understanding and more supportive than he's been previously, but obviously we're at the front end of that. Let me just offer a perspective about this issue, a couple of things, then I'll ask the mayor to testify. I was involved with the passage of the legislation 10 years ago, I guess now 11 years ago, that established the state support for the hockey arena. And one of the things I've heard from members of the Senate is, 11 years ago, you folks in St. Paul were all for this, and you wanted us to do this, and we did it. And now you're coming back and saying it was a bad deal. I just want to state for the record, I said it was a bad deal 11 years ago. 11 years ago, I said that St. Paul would find it very difficult to sustain a debt of that magnitude over the lifetime of the debt. And to be honest, what happened at the time, and there's no question that the arena has made a difference to downtown St. Paul, has made a difference to the East Metro, certainly has made a difference to the state in terms of hockey coming back to Minnesota. I don't disagree with that at all. But the then Mayor Coleman of not the Mayor Coleman to my left, but the Mayor Coleman 11 years ago had made an agreement with the hockey team that if the state did not come through with the proposed support from the state, the city was then going to absorb two-thirds of the cost of the hockey arena instead of the proposed one-third. And that would have absolutely been devastating to the city of St. Paul. St. Paul, I've lived on my 4 years of college in Chicago. I've lived in St. Paul all my life. I'm one of the few remaining Metro senators who, like Senator Metzen, represents the area we grew up in. But I will tell you that there was no question that a city the size of St. Paul was not going to be able to handle a debt of that significance. And when it was proposed then that the way out of this was to assume a loan to have some upfront support from the state, but then assume a loan of that magnitude, I said at the time that we were boxed in, we didn't have a choice, but that at some time in the future, we would regret the size of the debt. So part of this, on my part, is a question of equity, that where we have provided these kinds of facilities for other places, and to be blunt, notably the city of Minneapolis, we've done so with a better ability for that city to absorb the costs. The Gopher football stadium is paid for in totality by state funds. The new baseball stadium is paid for by a Hennepin County sales tax, so spread out among the entirety of Hennepin County, including areas that are somewhat wealthier than other parts of Hennepin County. So these kinds of efforts have been absorbed by a greater ability to handle the payments, or in the case of the Gopher football stadium, not even worry about the payments. And St. Paul is stuck with this. I should also mention that when Minneapolis did make an attempt to do something on their own through a privately financed Target Center, those owners came back to the state, went back to the city of Minneapolis, said, we can't handle it. And the state did step in to provide ongoing support, which continues to the present day. The other comment I'd like to make, and the mayor's going to speak to this better than I can.
Mr. Chair, there's no ongoing support for the Target
Center. That's right. It ended last year, I think. Sorry, Senator Dibble, but we did have the ongoing support. And I've supported some of these efforts from Minneapolis, and so it's not meant to be jealousy on my part. It's just a question of equity. In fact, the other issue in 98 was the convention center. And that cost was included in the 98 bonding bill as bonding support for Minneapolis. And I was very supportive of that, and I think the Minneapolis Convention Center has done some spectacular things for this part of the country. So part of this is just a question of equity on the part of St. Paul. The other issue I want to raise, because I do think it's gotten a little bit, I won't say too much press, but I think it's allowed this to be placed in a context somewhat different from how the city and myself are offering this bill. And that is the construction of the rink, which is part of a greater, the so-called pond, which is part of a much greater effort within St. Paul, one, to return some tax dollars to the state of Minnesota by the enhancement of our event district. And I would certainly argue if you take the Energy Center out of its individual context and place it in the context of everything else going on in that part of St. Paul, the Ordway, the Science Museum, the Children's Museum, the Xcel Energy Center, the proposal to build this additional smaller rink becomes part of that greater effort, provides some money directly back to the state, but is a much smaller piece of this effort. So those are the couple of comments I wanted to make at the outset, maybe a little bit more from a defensive perspective than an offensive perspective. And now for the offense, I'm going to ask Mayor Coleman for some help.
Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I have no problem being offensive. usually not the problem. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to first of all thank Senator Cohen for his steadfast support over the last several years on this effort of the City of St. Paul. I think since we were last before the committee, we've made some great progress that has really tied the debt relief for the facility to an exciting project that I think will be critically important for the East Metro area and for the state of Minnesota. Being the capital city, we do have tremendous events that bring people from across the state of Minnesota and, quite frankly, from across the region into our state or into the city of St. Paul. If you were in the streets of downtown St. Paul over the weekend with the WCHA tournament that was going on, if you were there last week with the state high school hockey tournament or before that the state wrestling tournament, this has really become a destination environment for people from across the state. As Senator Cohen mentioned, you also have the Xcel, or in addition to the Xcel and the River Center complex, You do have the History Center. You have the Science Museum. You have the Ordway. If you're not familiar specifically with what we call the Event District in the city of St. Paul, there is a map in your packet that you can refer to that will help you kind of identify what those pieces are. But the Minnesota Event District generates over $200 million a year and brings 4.5 million people, 4.5 million visitors annually. They are tourists that come for the figure skating championship to something at the opera. They might be season ticket holders to the Wild, or they may be there for one of the state high school events that we host there. The Event District employs over 1,000 people. It is going very strong. But we also know that the Event District can be even stronger if we continue to invest in it. That's why this building and the facility, the community facility across the street that we are kind of dubbing the Pond, is really an important next step in the success of the Event District. It will help us continue to grow this as a regional destination. It will play well off of some of the other facilities that we have here. It will be a chance for us to incorporate a lot of additional youth and amateur as well as professional sports activities in that facility. It is a facility that will be publicly owned and managed by the City of St. Paul. It will be operated year-round. It's a project that can immediately generate 200 construction jobs. The city owns the property that this facility would go on, and we can get we can start moving dirt as soon as financing is in place. And we think that it's critically important that we build this project because as the market rebounds, we also think that there will be an opportunity to do additional private investment in whether that's retail or restaurants or office space that would go in conjunction with this. It meets the initiatives of the legislature and President Obama, quite frankly. It creates jobs, it's shovel ready, and it's a strong piece of our economic future. What we're asking you to do is to allow the City of St. Paul to use its resources more effectively, more efficiently, and help us create some jobs not only in the short term with the construction of the facility, but also in the long term with the jobs that that will generate at that facility. It's exactly what we need to be doing. It helps add to our tax base. It helps generate revenue, and I think strengthens an important destination for people across the state of Minnesota. With that, I'd like to thank you for your consideration. I'll stand for questions.
And, Mr. Sir, Chairman, if I could just add one other comment. We have some folks here in support of this this afternoon from St. Paul Port Authority, from the Building Trades, the River Center Convention Bureau, the St. Paul Chamber, and we do have a packet of letters of support that have been distributed to all the members. So this is certainly an important issue for the City of St. Paul, and we ask for the support of the division.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a great idea and a great project, and you know, I'm all for vitality in St. Paul, and I love the Event District, and I love the Pond. But we've had this conversation before. Senator Cohn has represented that because we did something like this for Minneapolis, we should do this for St. Paul. And maybe we should do this for St. Paul, but it's not because we did something like this for Minneapolis. You know, the convention center, the part left out of the convention center bonding was when $89 million in bonding was forgiven. That was in exchange for Minneapolis itself bonding for $220 million, which Minneapolis pays for the operation and the debt service on those bonds through sources that are generated within Minneapolis. And likewise, the Target Center, that was $750,000 that Minneapolis got for about 15 years out of about $11 million or so. That was some $80 million in debt that the city, again, pays for from its own sources, including TIF revenue and some local taxes and the like, and has put $14 million of its own money just to update the facility. And, of course, I think the ballpark, if you talk to folks in Hennepin County, they feel very much that that is not a state effort, that that's very much a Hennepin County effort that's going on. And the Gopher Stadium, of course, is a university facility. But I just need to make sure that we're clear that we're not saying you did this for Minneapolis, so you need to do this for St. Paul. We may do this for St. Paul. $32 million bucks to do something really fantastic. That's great. I'll probably support it. But, you know, we just got to be clear about what and how and why we're doing this.
Well, Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, I did not mean to put Senator Dibble on the defensive. And, in fact, Friday night I will be in Minneapolis at Orchestra Hall, a Minneapolis facility. A couple weeks ago I was at Williams Arena, Minneapolis. So I certainly participate and enjoy the amenities of Minneapolis. I will suggest, and I don't know how many people kind of look around the table, we're here during the 98 session when we did this, even separate from, so maybe I could get away from this, you know, and not meaning to chastise Minneapolis, but get away from just the Minneapolis versus St. Paul. It's something I've never participated in around this place. I do think that clearly when you look at efforts we've made many places around the state and the significant bonding authorizations we've had for a variety of efforts, most all of which I've been supportive of, this has been a very unusual way to finance one of these facilities. And it's been done in a way that is simply not supportable. And again, this isn't a criticism of Minneapolis because in 98, I was supportive of the convention center effort. And I knew at the time St. Paul was being put into a box where we had no choice at the end of that session but to accept the financing as now exists. In a more perfect world, we would not have done this.
So. Mr. Chair and member,
Mayor.
And Senator Dibble, if I could just add, I think that this project stands on its own. I think it's always hard, you know, you're comparing apples and oranges, and there are a lot of different reasons why the politics of a particular project played out a certain way. And I think that this one was kind of a classic, the politics of the original financing package, I think Senator Cohen alluded to. There were a lot of politics around it. I was a freshman on the city council after the commitment and the obligation had occurred by the city of St. Paul to build the facility. But as we were up here seeking state finances, there were a lot of machinations that went through. But I think that if we just look at this on its own, in terms of what we can accomplish, if we do achieve the loan forgiveness, if we look at it from the standpoint of creating jobs, doing it in a way the city of St. Paul will have paid back 12 years of the obligation under the proposal that's before you, we would still continue to pay an additional 4 years. Under the obligation, but once we get that project going, we can break ground on this project.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, let me just say I think we're all in agreement. This is a great project. It can very much stand on its own, and I'm not engaged in feeling competitive. It's just the implication is that somehow we've given Minneapolis $32 million, you know, some sort of big cash gifts, and we just haven't done that. Minneapolis is, through its own effort, built these facilities.
Senator Dibble, I think your points are well taken. I don't think it's our intention to have this be between Minneapolis and St. Paul, but that's fine. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm from Buffalo, and I go to both Minneapolis and St. Paul, so I'll get out of that debate. But my question to you, Senator Cohn, is that you've stated us several times that with this loan you felt like St. Paul was put in a box and really is an unsustainable debt for them that they were, you know, sort of corralled into. But I'm wondering what you see with the difference, because you're basically exchanging $32 million in this loan for $40 million in bond issuing. Is that correct? I mean, Senator, that's kind of the idea. And so why is that debt preferable for you? I guess why do you see the $40 million as preferable to the $32 million in the loan?
Well, I think,
Senator Cohn.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohn, the way the city has amortize this financing, rather than straight cash payments, it'll be somewhat easier to do in this fashion. And I'm not sure, Mayor, if you have somebody here from the city who can offer a little more detail as to how you put the financing part of this together. I can respond, but it wouldn't be maybe in the detail the center is looking for.
Mayor Coleman.
I'll have Margaret Kelly from our Director of Finance. Maybe she can explain a little bit more, but let me preface that, Senator, by saying that I think one of the things that this does, because it's an activity generator, because it's an additional revenue generator, bringing another 250,000 people into the event district, we do think that the benefit of that, it's well worth the trade-off of taking the debt stream that we're paying to the state of Minnesota and adding it to a facility that we think will generate some additional, potentially $1 million worth of tax revenues because of the facility.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Margaret Kelly, City of St. Paul. Basically, forgiving this loan will allow us to redirect these payments that are going to pay off debt at the state to pay off debt that the city would incur in constructing this new community facility. And so while it's trading one loan for another, it allows us to get a whole new facility out of a redirection of payments.
Thank you.
Senator Metzen, then Senator Keeley.
Well, I was just going to suggest to Senator Cohn,
to avoid that heavy sales tax in Hennepin County next week, you could eat in St. Paul, then go over to the...
Oh, we started it again.
I didn't want to get into that argument, but the Lexington is right on the way. Save that extra sales tax and hell with Hennepin. Let Hennepin pay their own way.
Mr. Chairman, of course, Lexington is in the middle of my district, so I enjoy that. To save more money, I was going to go to South St. Paul, though. I was going to detour and go to South St. Paul and then go over to Minneapolis.
Boy, that'd be the day if you paid for dinner in South St. Paul. Oh, you didn't say you were going to pay. No, okay.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Coleman, was there? I'm new here, so I don't know what the past presentations have been, but is there a feasibility study on this to see if we really need another hockey rink in the metropolitan area? One of the reasons I ask is because we're in the process of building two football stadiums and a baseball stadium, and there's already several facilities that can accommodate hockey or ice skating programs in the metropolitan area. So, it's one thing to build a nice new facility in St. Paul, but is it going to be drawing support and cause some of these other arenas problems down the road because we're spreading the entertainment dollars so thin?
Mayor Coleman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, thank you. That's a good question. We have had a feasibility study that has suggested that this facility is not only would be very, very successful, but could be much in demand. We do have, because of the relationship with the XL and some of the state high school hockey tournaments and that kind of a facility, there would be a lot of families that would be coming down and using that. We know that there are some smaller amateur events and some other high school events that could be using this facility. It could be somewhat akin to the depot in downtown Minneapolis in terms of just a community skating facility, and so very much so. And I don't know if anybody else wants to speak to the feasibility study, but we obviously have looked at that and tried to determine what would be best. We don't believe that this poses any competition to any of the other facilities. We are the state of hockey, and we like to, in the city of St. Paul, Hockey Town USA has become an increasingly important brand for us, and we think it begets more activity, not less.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Coleman, I'm just wondering, you've got so much concentration of hockey now, where's the addition of additional funds going to come from to pay for this facilities versus what you currently have?
Well, I know that, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, we do know that, and I've been present at other testimony where people from around the state of Minnesota have come and said, that they're dropping out of hockey because they got to practice at, if they find ice time, it's at 1 in the morning or it's at 5 in the morning. We believe there's heavy demand for these facilities. And the nature of this particular facility is a little bit different than just a straight, one of the municipal rinks or whatever, because it would bring specific events to the activity or to the facility, as opposed to just purely a sheet of ice that might be used for practice time, although it can be used for that as well.
Senator Metzen and then Senator Pearson.
I think I carried the so-called Mighty Ducks bill about 10, 12 years ago. And
we all think you did. We all remember that you did.
I carried the Mighty Ducks bill. And the biggest reason that happened was because of the advent of girls and women's hockey. And because sometimes the girls were skating at 3, 4 in the morning or late at night, and so that money provided additional arenas around the state, mainly for girls' hockey. And it still didn't fulfill the need. I mean, there's still not a lot of ice time available. So this, in my opinion, is not going to... A little addition in St. Paul's not going to detract from South St. Paul or Bethel or what have you, because there's a lot of girls' hockey teams playing now, so that shouldn't be an issue, in my opinion.
That's a good point, Senator. Senator Pearsall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask Mayor Coleman or Senator Cohen, either one, is there an established site for the actual arena, and where is it in the city? Because I was raised in St. Paul, and I don't
Mayor
where
Coleman.
It's going to be.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pearsall, there is a facility, I believe, in your packet is the map of the event district. This is the property we're talking about is the property that's directly across from the XL Energy Center. It is the what is now the flat surface lot that was used for some of the national television studios that were temporarily housed there during the RNC convention.
Thank you. Oh, there.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Do you have anyone else that would like to testify, Senator Cohen?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't. If members have no further questions, I'd ask that the matter be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill.
Further discussion. Seeing none on Senator Cohen's motion that Senate File 1115 be laid over for possible inclusion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. The motion is
Mr. O'Rourke.
Committee will meet on Wednesday. More bills, and we're also hearing a presentation from a project that we funded last year between the University of Minnesota and some neighborhoods around there.
Oh, there's some more cake. Maybe one cake.
More cake. Anything else?
Yeah, more.
There's more cake as well.
Remember, there's more cake over here if you hadn't had cake.
Me